Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our guest is the awesome Hannah Verwack, COO at Thrive Themes, and we're going to talk about building a calm company. This episode is brought to you by Copilot. Looking for a better way to track your spending? Tired of juggling multiple bank apps? Copilot is a beautifully designed personal finance app created by Google engineers that gives you insights you won't get from your banks. Let Copilot automatically find your subscriptions, categorize your spending, and track your investments and net worth. Download Copilot today at copilot.money and use promo code UIBREAKFAST to double your free trial. Hey, Hannah.
Hey, Jane.
Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
For those who don't know, please give us a little bit of your background story. What did you do before joining Thrive Themes? How long you've been there and what the company does?
All right. Well, buckle up. It's a fun ride. I have a pretty atypical story, to be honest, to now be leading a software company because I studied fashion. And I started out as a shoes buyer. So I actually worked for several years as a retail shoes buyer for one of the biggest retail companies in the world. And yeah, at the same time, I built my first website when I was 11. And when I had to choose what to study, I wasn't sure whether I wanted to study fashion or whether I wanted to study computer science. So, and at that time, the truth is that internet wasn't something that you could study. It was still at the, let's say, the beginning of the internet. And I looked at computer science and was like, yeah, coding, that's not my thing. But I've always followed internet marketing and what was going on the internet. And so even though I was a shoes buyer, I had my own online companies on the side. I really started dabbling online with selling online courses on how to sew lingerie. So that's another another interesting one. And while I was doing that, I was using this company. It was called Thrive Theme. So I was using their products. And at one point, I get a newsletter and they were saying that they were looking for marketing apprentices. And at that time, they laid off the whole buying department. I was working on my own online company, which was teaching female entrepreneurs how to promote themselves online. And I saw this opportunity to go to an apprenticeship for the company and a company that I really liked their product. And I was like, oh, okay, why not? It was 3 months in Barcelona. I was living in Paris at the time. And yeah, I called my dad and I'm like, Dad, I'm going to live in Barcelona for 3 months. And he's like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, yeah, there's this company, they're doing apprenticeship for marketing apprentices. And I'm going to go to Barcelona. And he's like, don't you have to apply first? And I'm like, yeah, sure. But that's dumb. Like, I read the landing page. They are looking for me. Like, I'm the perfect candidate. So I just, for me, like applying for that apprenticeship was just a formality. So I applied. I had Shane on the phone, who's the co-founder of Thrive Themes, who was organizing the apprenticeship. He invited me to Barcelona. And basically, like, immediately we just hit it off. I enjoyed working together so much. So he asked me after the apprenticeship to stay with the company. So I went from marketing apprentice to head of marketing to then at some point he was like, hey, how would you feel about leading the company? Because I actually want to go off and do something else, do another project. And at that point, I was just about, yeah, I was like, been two or three years in the role of head of marketing. And I was starting to wonder what the next step would be in my career and what I wanted to do. And so basically, I came to the conclusion that I wanted to become CEO, and he came to the conclusion that he didn't want to lead the company. So that just turned out really well. So yeah, that's now, the apprenticeship is about 5.5 years ago. And since about 2 years, I'm leading the company So yeah, that's kind of what happened. And so at Thrive Themes, we make WordPress plugins and WordPress themes for solopreneurs to help them create a conversion-focused website. So I went from being one of the customers to being marketing, head of marketing, and now leading the company.
Such a fascinating story. Thanks for sharing. So you're a shoe dog / lingerie lady turned COO of a large company. Yeah,
something like that. Sometimes I still wonder how this all happened. And even though it seemed such a normal progression once I'm in there, when people are like, oh, so what did you study? I'm like, yeah, fashion. That's normal.
So for the context, we're going to be talking about a calm company. And mm-hmm. you had a company of like 70 people. Mm-hmm. And like, I can imagine anything but calm when I just imagine this number. So, and you've watched it grow from like 30 to 70. And you had it some higher. And you definitely made decisions along the way. So what is a calm company that you've built there?
Yeah, so the concept of a calm company, I stole that from Jason Friedman from Basecamp. So he wrote the book, It Doesn't Have to Be Crazy at Work. And I think he really started this movement of software companies and SaaS companies where the goal of the company is not just to exit. The goal of the company is not to bring a 10x return to investors. And that really resonated with me, not just that book, but also that concept. And that's one of the reasons why I love the company so much, is because we are a bootstrapped company. And what Shane has always tried to do with the company and what I am now continue doing is we want the company to be a really good place to work. And we want it to be basically the best thing that you can do for your career is to work at Thrive Themes. And at the same time, of course, we only get paid when we make sure that our customers are happy. So rather than having this strategy of hyper growth, where getting millions of investment and then reinvesting those millions and we don't make any money, the goal of Thrive Themes is really to make our customers happy and to make it a really good place to work from an employee point of view. And so for me, that just really resonate, I guess, with my character and just with what I want in my life, because there's more to life than just work, and work is important, which is why it is so important to have that as a growth opportunity in your life where you can actually grow and learn and develop yourself and really enjoy what you're doing. And so that's what I understand when I say a calm company. Don't get me wrong, we work pretty hard and we have deadlines, and it's not just like everybody is sitting there and relaxing in their long chair, but it's more about the goal of the company not just being making money at any price.
That sounds amazing, and everybody says that, but how does that translate to like your everyday routines and principles you apply there?
So a couple of things where that relate to is, you know how with Slack and messages and everything going on, some companies it's just like 24 hours a day you're supposed to be answering your messages, right? Like, that's not the case. We have a pretty 9-to-5 way of working, I would say, even though we have people all over the world, which then makes it 9-to-5 in their time zone. But it's one of those things where we have moments of deep work. So it's very normal that for a couple of hours, you don't check your Slack and you don't answer immediately. And that is something that is very important if you actually want to get work done. And the same thing, it's like on the weekend, you don't expect anyone to answer on the weekend other than our support team who's working on the weekend. But yeah, it's really this idea of boundaries and making sure that it stays within limits of when people are working. And at the same time, it's also that idea of what do you want to learn? What's the next objective that you have personally in your job, and really making sure that we use the traction system which is a system to like set goals and set rocks. And part of that is also like, okay, how can you improve your department, for example? How can we make sure that the team morale is getting better? How can we have some fun? What are some really fun projects that we want to do? So yeah, those are a couple of things that come to mind immediately.
You were leading the marketing department for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So as a person who's also responsible for marketing and working with marketing contractors and just trying to organize the workflow, what does calm marketing mean for you?
Calm marketing, it means that you don't freak out. I think that's the main thing, where it's just, if something isn't working the way you want it to work, it's like, okay, let's go back to the drawing board. How can we improve this? What can we do? What are the resources we need? Rather than just being like, oh, you go ahead, our Facebook ads aren't working, let's fix this right now. Like, that is not a calm company. It's also looking at what's missing for somebody to succeed. So for example, if at some point we're like, oh, we're actually not doing a really good job at SEO, for example, then the question is, what's the problem? What are we, do we not have the resources to do so? Is the person not trained sufficiently? Is it the wrong person in the wrong seat? What's going on? So you really try to understand what's going on rather than just to freak out and to yell at people and to tell them to fix stuff without actually making it possible. Like, I think a lot of companies, and definitely been in that situation too, where it's just like, yes, over the next 6 months, we're going to double our revenue. And that is just like put there as some hope and wishing. But there's no real strategy behind it. There's no resources behind it. It's just one of those things of like, oh yeah, we decided that we're going to do it, so now it's going to happen. And we did that for a while. And the problem is that projects just didn't get done because we were working on 10 projects at the time and none of them got finished. So a calm company is also a company where it's very, very clear what the priorities are. And those priorities don't change every day. And that is actually, it's a discipline from everyone involved because it's so easy. And I'm the first one who has to like bite my tongue to not be like, oh, but we can do that in parallel. Let's just also do this thing, you know?
Yep. Yep.
So, and I think especially in marketing, it's like, don't start 10 campaigns. Like, start one campaign, optimize one campaign, make sure that that one's working before we go on to the second campaign. And before we have some new idea that we're also going to implement. And because then in the end, like, nothing's really happening.
That's definitely great advice. I'm curious, between, you know, quantitative KPIs for mm-hmm. marketing and something that's like intangible, such as building the brand, some ephemeral things like podcasting that can never get measured, you know, mm-hmm. except for listenerships and things like that. Where does your balance lie?
I think it's important to always have KPIs that people can basically have a real influence on. So for example, let's say now we decided that YouTube is our new marketing, not new, but that we're going to double down on YouTube. If we put a KPI of like the number of subscribers, that's a lag indicator, right? And so, yeah, you have some impact on that, but not as much as on the number of videos that you produce, for example. So yeah, there's always that idea of like, what are the lead indicators and lag indicators and those KPIs? So that we make sure that people have a real influence. So for example, if you believe that the podcast is important and that there's our Facebook group, it's very hard to have a tangible return on investment for the Facebook group because, yeah, it's very unclear to know, like you don't have people like who went there and then bought and you can just be like, oh, for every person in the group, we get a dollar out. Like, that's not how it works. But do we believe that it contributes to reducing churn? Yes, we do. So at that point, it's like, okay, how can we make sure that people are happy and that we that it's an enjoyable place to be with the customers? So there are some things that are just harder to measure, and I think you have to accept that. And sometimes you have to throw spaghetti at the wall and you don't know which one is going to work yet. But I think as long as the KPIs, if your revenue is going in the right direction, if the number of subscribers is going in the right direction, you're doing something right. And some of those things are more intangible than others, for sure.
What were some of those intangible projects for your company throughout the years? Just curious. You mentioned the Facebook group.
The Facebook group. The Facebook group is definitely one of those. We have Thrive University, where we do a monthly webinar, which is really just teaching people online marketing. We're not even trying to sell anything on those webinars. It's really just like helping our audience. And I think that is also fairly intangible. We've played around with a podcast or with the idea of a podcast. And then in the end, we were like, okay, that's not really our strength. So probably that's not where we should put our resources. But yeah, at some point we did like an interview tour with entrepreneurs, for example, and that's one of those more intangible projects. And I think, yeah, I put those in also like the having fun as a company and in the projects where if somebody is really motivated to do something like that and it fits within the brand DNA, I think it's worth giving it a try. So yeah.
As a SaaS founder over nearly 4 years that we've run UserList, one thing I've learned is that it's way more about, you know, perseverance and the journey and enjoying yourself. But at the same time, of course, there is always stress, you know, to grow better, et cetera, et cetera. How do you make sure that, your leadership team and all your employees enjoy the ride?
You ask them.
Great. Tell us more. Like, to have a certain routine. You can do 70 one-on-ones, right? Yourself.
For me, it's very much about delegation. I think it's actually probably one of my strengths is to delegate and to trust people that they will do a better job than I can ever do. And so for me, it's with the leadership team, I'm having those one-on-ones so that we can have that discussion about what they are excited about in their team. What is something, for example, our design department, like what is something that they are really excited about? What are the projects that they would like to be working on? And then based on that information that I'm getting from the design department, from the support department, from the marketing department, from all the different departments, we can set the strategy for the company. So it goes both ways, where the company's strategy is based on what I believe will help the company succeed. And then it also feeds back in from what are the people in the team actually excited about? What do they want to do? What do they see is really beneficial? And because we're having that open communication, those executive leaders are also used to having those communications with their teams. So then again, they are having those one-on-ones with their teams. And we do have a very non-hierarchical communication. So I do speak with our support agents directly, and I do speak with our UI designer directly, where if somebody has a good idea and they want to bring it up, they can always do that. To give you an example, one of our people in documentation, so who's writing our technical documentation, recently was like, oh, I would really like to actually make a newsletter where we can send our documentation to our customers, because like we're putting a lot of work in our documentation and it really helps people to get to know our product better. And so then she came up with that idea, brought it to her manager. And then we had a discussion. We're like, okay, yeah, that actually like next month that could fit in with some of the plans that we already have. So, and that makes her job much more fun, right? Because she's not just writing documentation. She is in charge of making our documentation the best possible documentation that we can have. And the moment that she's like, oh, I want to do that through a monthly newsletter. We're like, yeah, why not? Like, that's a good idea. So I think that's part of making sure that everyone is enjoying it, is also just listening to the initiatives that people are really excited about.
Let's talk about the delegation part. And I'm curious, over the years, as you've, you know, as you've improved as a manager, as you've grown, what were the lessons that you learned that you didn't do in the beginning, that you didn't get right?
I'm not the best at everything. and I don't need to have final say in everything. And yeah, that idea of being the bottleneck and just like being superwoman and having to make decisions about everything, that is something where just you can't do that at a certain level anymore. And it doesn't mean that you're less valuable to the company, because I think that's often one of the problems, where somebody is like, oh, but it's because I'm the one saying yes or no that my role is valuable. Where actually, like, at one point I believe that we were basically three people in quote unquote working in a 60 people company, because we had three bottlenecks, which was me and the two co-founders. But the thing was like, oh, we had to sign off on everything, and nothing would happen unless one of the three of us would sign off on it. And that was just so detrimental for productivity, first of all, but also even for people enjoying what they're doing and feeling responsible for what they're doing. So I think over the years, I just got better at giving people responsibility and trusting them to make the right decision. And then teaching, so a management coach that I had taught me how to basically let people make their own decisions, even though that wouldn't be the decision that I would have made, but simply asking why they made that decision. And then if the thought process behind the decision was correct or was the same as I had, even though I came to another conclusion, you let them run with that decision. So it's my role became much more about like, oh, why did you choose that? And can you explain that to me, rather than being like, oh, but I would have gone with B instead of A. That was probably the biggest lesson.
Let's say, for example, I'm currently serving as an editor, like, who checks on all content that we're putting out. Thankfully, I'm not the only one producing it anymore, but I'm still like editing a lot. And for example, at this current stage, we can't really afford like a professional editor to join our team, because we're not a content company really. Mm-hmm. So what do I do? Do I keep myself as a bottleneck? Do I potentially risk the quality of the content if I want to remove myself from it? Like, what's the solution?
For us, for example, on content, we do peer review.
Uh-huh.
So where everybody reviews everyone's work, or everyone can review everyone's work, and you're not allowed to just say, I don't like this, or this is not good. You always have to give feedback. So if for example, you're like, oh, the title of this article or the introduction of this article isn't hitting home, you're not just allowed to say that or to change the intro of the article. You actually have to give an explanation why you believe it's not good and why you believe that it should be better, like it would be better another way around. So that's definitely one of those where, yeah, you spend more time than writing it yourself. But after two times, three times, four times, where you're like, hey, we really need a better hook in this intro. I think that if we can hook someone with a curiosity, no. People get it. And so stuff does get better over time. And everybody gets into that habit of wanting to improve. So I think if there's one thing that in the marketing department we did really, really well, was this idea of you want someone in the marketing team to give you feedback so that you can improve your work. So it's, if we were at a point where if you submitted an article and you got no feedback, you were like, what's wrong? No, like, what's wrong with this article? Was it so boring that people don't even want to feedback on it? And that just brings this whole culture of incremental improvements. And again, of you you don't have to be the one that edits everything because other people in the team can do that.
That's great. Do you have any methods of getting expert knowledge outside of the leadership team's head? Because it feels sometimes that contractors, for example, it's really silly to expect with their like 3 months being involved with the company, it's silly to expect them to have full context of what's happening in the entire like email automation industry for us. So, and yes, of course, there is like tried and proven methods like interviewing somebody on the topic, etc. Maybe you have any other recipes of how to propagate expert knowledge from a couple team members into the masses?
That is a hard one for sure. And I'm not going to say that we found a really good solution for that, because it's one of the reasons that we don't normally work with freelancers. Like, everyone is in-house because we tried working with writers, for example, with content writers from outside of the team, and they just wouldn't understand the style. They wouldn't understand the product. They wouldn't understand. Like, it just was really, really hard to get something to the quality that we wanted it to be. Now, when it's technical knowledge, so what we recently started doing is, for example, our designers are not content writers, but they have all the knowledge about how they make conversion-focused landing pages. And so then teaming up, where it's teaming up the content writer with somebody from support or with our tech support who's really specialized in speed optimization, for example, and then having them write that article together, that has been fairly successful, but it's still inside the company at that point.
Let's talk about hiring for a little bit.
All right.
What are your favorite recipes, principles, and hacks when it comes to that? And also curious, like, how do you determine the roles that are necessary to be filled out? And like, do you hire when it hurts, or do you hire up in advance so you can, you know, have time to nurture the person?
Yes, 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 maybe yes. So first of all, one hack or one thing that that's been working really good for us is hiring from our customers. So the first wave of asking people to work for us will always be to our email list. And part of that is because they already know the company, they already like the company, they like the product. So they just have so much advance already on somebody who doesn't know the company, doesn't know the product, never read your blog before, never seen your emails before. So that's definitely been a really good hack. And one of our best, like some of our best people came from being customer. And I mean, hey, take myself. I was a customer of the company before starting to work. Then about your question for like, do you hire and nurture, or do you hire for the job to be done at the time that you really need it? I think there's a bit of both. So we've successfully used this apprentice model where when the first wave, when I got hired, it was because Shane was like, we need a marketing department. So we actually need to hire like multiple people at the time. And so doing this apprenticeship model where there were five people and three of us got hired at that time. And two of us are still with the company 5 years later. So that was like a good way because, yeah, Shane could mold us the way he wanted. And we did that again the year after. So we did another apprenticeship, hired another three people for the marketing department. And it is intense. It is super intense. Like doing a 3 month training people up like in person while also doing your job was was for sure one of the most intense things I've done. But it is a good way to start with people who are just really, really motivated and who do not necessarily have all the knowledge yet. Then sometimes you just need to hire for the job. I always prefer to see if inside the company there's someone who can do the job. Of course, it's easier when you're 40, 50, 60 people than when you're five people. But we, like our support team, for example, has definitely been a source of of people that got moved on to other departments, because again, they know the product, they know the customer, they know the company already, they like their colleagues. And if at that point somebody is like, oh, I actually want to become a software tester, we will always give them the opportunity to train and to become, like, to grow into that role that they are looking for. So, which brings then to another part where training, like internal training or training people up is, is a big part of our culture. So, anybody in the company can ask for a training and will, I don't think we've ever refused trainings because, again, like some support people became developers, support people became marketing people, some marketing people became product people. So there's a lot of also just shifting within the company, because I think that's maybe one last part of this monologue, but hiring people for character and for cultural fit. And I know this sounds so sappy, but when you have people who believe in your company, in the product, and who are willing to learn and to put their best foot forward, I don't think we've ever not found a role in the company for those people. So,
That's a lot of great insight. Thanks so much. How do you evaluate people for, let's say, leadership positions? Because I know you've hired for that.
It is a hard one because I think the Peter Thiel principle is like one of the worst things that happens is when somebody is really, really good at their job and they get promoted into a management position. And often the truth is it's not your best developer that's going to be the best team lead. And it's not your best marketer who's going to be the best head of marketing. So I find it very hard to hire from outside for leadership positions. It's not been very successful for us because, it's hard to have somebody come from outside and then all of a sudden have to like lead this team. And maybe I've just haven't cracked that code yet. So seeing the potential to become a manager, so somebody who actually really enjoys listening to people, talking to people, and who's also probably more of a jack of all trades. So for the marketing department, for example, I prefer having somebody who's pretty good at copy, pretty good at content writing, pretty good at everything, and who's not super specialized in one specific thing, so that they can help everyone in the department. But I still think that just listening and somebody who's not ego-driven, I think that's the worst trait for a leader, is when their ego is the most important thing, because then they won't admit that they were wrong. And in my opinion, that's the first thing that you need to be able to say as a leader, is like, it was my fault. Because it always is. Like, basically everything in the company is my fault. And I think that is an important thing to keep in mind. And it can be your fault because you didn't communicate clearly what had to happen, because there was not enough resources, because a whole range of things that can happen. But it's always your fault as the manager, as the leader.
Have there been periods in your company history when you stopped being a calm company for a while?
Yes.
Tell us more.
Like I said, like, we've definitely fell into the trap of just following everything into every direction and thinking that we could chew off more than we could, and at that point it just, everyone seemed to be working so hard but nothing was happening. We also saw that, like, in the company, like, that happened at a point where we were like growing and you feel on top of the world and nothing can go wrong. And then 1 year later, you're like, oh, because we lost focus. You need to figure out how to fix that. So, and I think it's always a difficult balance. Like, there will always be moments where it's more like, there's a fire and you have to put out that fire. It's just, how can you make sure that that fire doesn't happen again? And how can you just not be in firefighting mode. So yeah, as a software company, like, bugs happen and server issues happen, and it's the kind of stuff that can very quickly become like a disaster. And for example, on I think it was somewhere between Christmas and New Year's, because I know that most of our people were in holidays. And yeah, we had one of our servers go down, and because of the processes that we had in place, like less than 1 hour later, everything was fixed without like, and had very little impact on our customers. And that's the type of stuff. It's because we had a huge fire at some point, and rather than just putting it out, we also put in place the processes for next time around that not to happen again. So investing in processes and investing in improving those processes is probably like one of the biggest learning points of when you are in a period where it's less calm.
That's great advice. What examples do you see from your friends, fellow companies that are anti-calm again?
Like I said, I'm very happy that we're a bootstrapped company, because I've heard horror stories about investors. I've heard friends of mine who, yeah, took investment money, and then basically because the investors were pushing for growth, they burned out their email list because they were sending promotion after promotion after promotion just to show that growth. Products that were released before they were ready, but just because the investors couldn't wait anymore. Yeah, that kind of stuff. It's, yeah, for example, as it took us way too long to create Theme Builder, but the product, once we pushed it out, we were really, really proud of it. And it was super solid. And even within the company, we were like, oh, like 6 months before, like, oh, should we just push it out? Because we knew it would bring in revenue. We knew that people were waiting for it. And because we didn't have that pressure from investors, we could actually make the decision not to do that and take the right decision over the long term rather than the short term money decision.
That's great. Thanks so much for sharing your wisdom today. Hope this all serves, you know, as an inspiration for people, our listeners who are building their teams currently. Mm-hmm. What is your final piece of advice, like one do and one don't, when it comes to building one?
One do, take holidays.
Oh, lovely.
I think that is so important to be able to disconnect. And I'm also bad at doing it, but every time I do, I'm so happy, because it does give you that new motivation, that new, like that shower moment, right? Where all of a sudden you have this amazing idea because you are, hopefully when we can travel again, because you are in Greece and you see this, whatever, and you're like, oh my God, the inspiration, and you have interesting discussions. And so, yeah, I think holidays together with take care of your body and your sleep, which is just like mental health and physical health. Like, yeah, I work out every day and I sleep probably 9 hours a night just because it's one of the things that I know that the moment that I stop doing that, everything goes downhill because you're basically working on your reserves and that's dangerous. So yeah, that's definitely one thing that I find super important. And what not to do was the other question. What's one thing not to do? I think one thing on if we go back to like your team, and one thing not to do is stepping in or overstepping your boundaries without explaining what happened and how the person can do better, because that erodes trust. And the moment that trust isn't there anymore, it's really, really hard to rebuild it. So for example, if I'm unhappy with something that happened in support, I can't just jump in and fix it myself, like, because that's just so detrimental to the manager who's leading the support team, for example. Like, I actually have to go to them and then explain why what happened wasn't okay and how to avoid that from happening in the future. So yeah, that for me, like that desire to jump in and just do it yourself is probably the one thing that you need to learn not to do.
Great lessons altogether. Thanks so much. Where can people find more of of you personally and your writing or something, and also about your company?
So the company, thrivethemes.com. I read every comment or most of the comments that are there. So that's definitely a way to just interact with the product, with us as a team. I'm very non-active online, actually. So
good for you.
Yeah, I do have a LinkedIn profile. You can send me a message. I will probably get it. But yeah, I'm not active on Twitter. I'm not. So yeah, probably LinkedIn. If somebody wants to reach me, that's the best way.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom today. This was great,
and I
wish you good luck in growing that Calm company even more.
Yep. Thank you so much.